23. Jack broke through the fever on the third night in a pool of cold sweat. He woke in the pre-dawn dark to find Nikki curled up on one end of the couch, sleeping soundly. He was hungry, and he had to go to the bathroom. He was steady on his feet. He was strong. He'd made it through the worst, and everything was going to be all right from here. For a little while, anyway. You lost control once, Jack. You didn't think that son of a bitch could turn on you. You didn't think he could become that. He chewed on his lower lip at the memory of his impossible twin, standing behind him, breathing hotly into his ear, painfully squeezing the back of his neck, the other hand slicked with a layer of petroleum jelly, saying, "You asked for this, brother. I always remember that. You invited me in." Did he? He wasn't sure. He hadn't killed him when he'd been weak and sickly. He hadn't followed his own instinct, which had been to throttle him and quench the life out of him, or just abandon him. But see, that's the thing. Jerry fucking knew I wouldn't do it, or be able to. He knew he could get away with it, all the while growing stronger, getting bigger, getting ready to clobber me. "Yes," he thought, "I did invite you, didn't I? Over and over I invited you because I refused to kill or abandon you when I had the chance, my loving brother. And I'll invite you again, soon, too. And when you come, oh boy, will I be ready for you." Jack walked carefully to the bathroom, as though stepping around broken glass or upturned metal tacks, and closed the door before turning on the light. He waited in the dark, afraid of what he might find in the mirror. But he had to look. He intended to burn the sight of himself, degraded and bedraggled, into his mind so that later, when the time was right, he could conjure it back up and use it to steel his nerve and fuel his rage. His finger rested on the light switch. The mirror glinted darkly in the small light emitted from under the door. He took a breath and flipped the switch. It was worse than he had imagined. He had to restrain himself from glancing away, forcing his eyes to remain on the mirror and see what he had become. He was gaunt and paper thin. His skin was grayish, like a man who'd been sick and shut up in a small room for a long while. He had rheumy and colorless eyes that were hung with dark bags. His beard was grown out long and patched with gray, and it covered from his cheekbones to the base of his neck. His hair was a greasy nest of snarls, and his neck was ringed with ugly, green-gray bruises. But the shape of his face tormented him the most. He had lost so much weight that his cheeks had become angular. His eyes bulged, and his forehead appeared rounded and slightly bulbous. He stared and forced himself to confront the result of his association with Jerry. "Never forget this. Remember every detail about this face. How lifeless the eyes. How thin and reedy and undernourished. Remember your rage." He fiddled with the buckle of his pants and laughed at himself. His pants were so loose on his hips, he might have been 10 years old wearing his father's clothes. When he let them go, they dropped around his knees. He winced at the stench that simple action brought. He would have to remove his underclothes and clean himself in the shower, and then destroy his garments. He bit his lower lip and spooled off a handful of toilet paper, then reached over and ran it under the faucet. He began to clean up. It was dried and crusted. Feces had run down the inside of his thigh. Like a fucking old man. He wanted to bawl, but he wouldn't give in to it. "No tears," he thought. "No fucking sissy tears here. We take it like a man." He could almost laugh. Almost. He did his best with the toilet paper. It didn't do much. He sat down. The humiliation seared through him. The indignation of it all. "You motherfucker, Jerry. You sick, twisted, goddamn motherfucker." How had he survived it? Every day like that. Sometimes twice in a single day. Oh, that motherfucker. The images were flipping back inside his mind. After the move from the condo in La Crescenta, he'd kept Jack inside the family cabin, in the upstairs room, in the big walk-in closet. He was warm, but that was about all the benefit he had. Jerry stuffed rags and blankets all around the doorframe so that Jack remained in utter darkness. He was bound and often hung, cruciform, by means of a wall-mounted St. Andrew's cross, delivered by Amazon, until his arms ached so bad and his chest felt like an anvil was caving it in, certain he was going to die or go mad. Once Jack was broken and delirious with pain, Jerry would open the door, bathing the air with his sweetly scented leather suit. Ah, that suit, that awful fucking suit that Jack had actually dreamt of, had had erotic nightmares of. Jerry, you cocksucker. Oh, how Jerry loved that suit. He'd had it custom made to the tune of $6,000 on Jack's Bank of America card. The day Jerry had brought it home from the tailor, Jack had thought Jerry was going to make him wear it. But to Jack's surprise, Jerry had dressed himself in it. From then on, it had been Jerry's signature look. Glistening from crown to foot in shiny black leather, Jerry would lean back, hips pushed forward, posturing as if for a medieval painting where the subject is assenting a lavishly designed codpiece. Jerry's pink tongue would then poke out from between the jagged zipper tracks and lick the metal edges in one complete revolution. He would say, "Time to play the game, Jack." And then he would unzip the fly of those tight leather pants and reach for a jar of petroleum jelly. How could Jack survive this? How many times a day did he not just fantasize about taking his own life, but actually plan out how he was going to do it? But then Amy had come, forcing Jack to abandon such plans. He was so afraid for her safety that he could no longer afford the luxury of despair. "She'll know it's not me, won't she?" But the next day, Jerry seemed to have grown younger, and he looked like Jack at age 25, strong and lean and strikingly good-looking. His face was thin and smooth, his hair jet black and thick, with not a strand of gray. "That's how I looked," Jack thought, "when I married Amy's mom." Jerry moved Jack out into the shed after Amy's first visit, bringing with him an armload of old blankets and musty pillows. "Come here, boy," Jerry said, "and lay down flat on your belly." With his hands cuffed behind his back, lying on the cold shed floor, Jerry carefully and gently snipped Jack's fingernails, and then with an emery board, sanded each nail down to a glossy edge. Jerry would do that every third day from that point forward. "Now sit up straight." Jerry slipped a leather slave collar around Jack's neck and tightened it just enough so that he could slip a single finger between Jack's neck and the band. Jack thought it a stupid gimmick until Jerry showed him the silver padlock that went with it. "He really means to chain me up like a dog." "Hold still, boy," he commanded as he clicked the lock into place on the collar. "Thank you." Then Jack watched in dull apathy as Jerry hammered a hole through the back wall of the shed, just large enough for the long chain to loop through and be tied down outside, where Jack wouldn't be able to reach its anchor. The chain was long enough that Jack could stand up and walk around, all the way to the doors, where the length ran out just shy of the threshold. Jerry tugged on the chain. "It's got a good hold on you, hey, Jack?" He said it as though the two of them were working together on a shared project. Later, Jack would procure a butter knife and use it to saw through the soft metal eyelet that made up the buckle post on his collar, where the lock slotted through. The incision would be small enough that he would be able to hide it from Jerry until the time was right, when he would snap the padlock off and slip out of the collar.
"Jerry, we can do whatever you want, all right? Every night, and we can, you know, play the game, okay? Just leave Amy alone, will you?"
Jerry sighed, disappointed.
"No, Jack, it didn't work like that. It's not part of the deal. Hey, look at me when I'm speaking to you. I truly am sorry for you, but I need Amy. I've met her, and I want her, and I'm going to have her. Besides, she wants to help me. She wants to be with me."
"No, Jerry, she doesn't. She wants to help me. She thinks you're me, that's all. She doesn't like you, Jerry."
"Stop talking, Jack. With all your lies and bullcrap, all right? She loves me. It's so obvious, and I love her, too. It's quite beautiful, really, what we shared. See, now that's where you're wrong, Jerry. Dead wrong. She's just trying to help me, your dad, because she thinks you're me, and she thinks I'm acting strange, and..."
Jerry jerked hard on the chain and shouted, "Heel!"
"Don't touch her, you hear me? Don't fucking touch my daughter."
Jerry scowled.
"I want her bad, Jack." "Take me instead, Jer. Take me instead, God damn you." Oh, I will, Jack. You know that. But I need her. She's mine too, you know. You touch her, and I'll kill myself. It was the only threat he could make. Right here, I swear to God, I'll fucking hang myself, Jerry. Jerry paused to consider that. You want me to bring the cross down, Jack? Hang it up permanently out here? Jack swallowed his rage. He was so weak, and Jerry was so strong. He wouldn't be able to keep him from stringing him up on that wretched cross. And then, God only knew how long he'd stay on it. Jerry, come on now. That's not fair, all right? Please, for the love of God, I'm begging you. Jerry nodded, smugly. And Jack knew that look. It meant he'd gotten what he wanted. Fine, Jerry said. But if she asks for it, if she consents, I'm going to take her, Jack. The hard way, the fast way, any old way. Blood and all. If she so much as hints at consent, you got it? Deal, Jack said through clenched teeth, trying to buy precious little time, hoping and praying his daughter was as strong as he imagined her. Deal, motherfucker, until I put a fucking shovel through your brain. But I'm alive, Jack thought, staring at the yellow bathroom walls in a hippie chick's cabin. God damn it, I'm alive. And so is my baby. And that means she can heal from all this pain. Don't worry, Bones. I'm going to get him, and I'm going to kill him, and then you'll be safe forever. He looked down and saw blood in the toilet bowl. He was so sore and loose down there, he imagined it like a sock that had lost its elastic. It's going to heal, he thought. Everything is going to heal. My God, Jack, what happened to you? He looked up and met Nikki's eyes. He instinctively covered himself with his hands. I'm sorry. I'll clean all this all up. His cheeks burned with shame. Tears made her eyes glint in the light. No, she said. No, you don't have to do that. Oh, Jesus, Jack. You got to tell me what happened to you. Oh, God, who did this to you? And your back, it's so scarred up. Let me help you. She pulled his pants off his legs one by one and shoved his stinking clothes into a corner. He felt like a shamed child. Turn the shower on. Get in, Jack. She reached under the sink for a pair of blue dish gloves. Can you stand up, okay? Soap is in there. I'm making food. I got some eggs and bacon. But if you can't handle the bacon, then I got some plain bread, too. Bread and eggs, Jack. I'll make them for you. You can eat as much as you want as long as you promise not to overeat and make yourself sick. And I'm going to throw these clothes out. I have other clothes here that will fit you. The shower spray was steaming, filling up the room. Use all the soap you need. Thank you, Nikki, he said. Thank you so much. Her hospitality and concern for his well-being made him tear up. Get clean, Jack. It was all she could say. She left and closed the door, and Jack stepped into the shower and began to wash the dirt and grime and dried blood down the drain. They ate as the sun was breaking dawn. Jack was even able to eat a piece of bacon. He was still so thin, it would take weeks to get himself back again, but that's all he needed, just a little bit of time. I didn't think you ate like this, he said. I don't normally, she said. I got all this for you, but I admit I like bacon. I don't get much because I try to be vegan. She picked up another blackened and curled slice. It's kind of a weakness. Jack chuckled. How did you come out here? He asked. In a car, Jack? Funny. But why? She shrugged. I don't fucking know. Well, I do, but it's going to sound stupid to you, so I won't tell you. Try me. Aren't you like a real person? I mean, in your normal life? And what does that mean exactly? He asked. Oh, you know, you have a job and a TV and you worry about scaling the social ladder of human experience, she said. Ah, yes, he said. I did, or still do have a job, I hope. And I admit to owning a TV. As for the social ladder of human experience, I think I fell off and bumped my head. She actually laughed at that. Do you think they fired you at your job yet? She asked. You might be able to sue them for wrongful termination or something. Actually, I'm part owner, so I would be suing myself, I think. She adjusted herself in her chair,
bringing one leg up onto her seat.
You want to call him? I have a phone, you know.
Jack glanced at the phone on the wall.
Maybe later, he said.
She glared at him from the other side of her coffee mug.
Continue.
Me? I thought we were interviewing you.
Oh, right, she said. Ugh, it's so boring, I can't stand it. I just want to be off the grid, that's all. I fucking hate society. That's it. I don't want to be a part of the game anymore.
Oh, well, he said. I guess if you can manage it, you know. It's too late for me. Well, was too late.
Yep, she said. I'm managing it.
So does that mean this is your cabin or you're renting it?
Fuck no, I don't rent. She set her cup down. It's my uncle's. But don't worry, he lives in Mexico and only shows up like once every 2 years, and even then he's drunk. Anyway, it was empty, and I was like, I'm taking it.
Does he know you're living in it? Jack asked.
Of course. What do you think, that I'm just squatting here? No, he's like, well, he's rich for one. He invented something, so he doesn't work. And he doesn't have any kids, so he kind of makes me his daughter, I guess.
Really?
Yeah, why?
She asked.
Jack shrugged.
Just interesting.
Is it?
Well, yeah, you're interesting, he said.
Me?
What, you don't think so?
I don't think of myself like that, she said. I think I'm just, I don't know, barely here.
Yeah, he agreed. That might be true, but that's what makes you interesting, I think anyway.
Cool, man. So now that you know about my personal life, what about you?
Jack leaned back in his chair. The sun was breaking over the horizon, waking the world. The birds were chirping in the forest. Where to begin? There was too much ground to cover in one breakfast chat. Finally, he just said, "What do you want to know?" She played with her fork and the remains of her eggs.
"I want to know what the fuck happened to you. I want to know why you're so skinny, and why you have marks all over your back. And I want to know how much danger I am in on account of you being here."
"Okay," Jack said soberly. "That's fair." He took a deep breath. He couldn't tell her everything. He just couldn't do that. But he needed to tell her enough to make her understand. He was thinking it over, trying to present the most logical aspect of the situation.
"As in today," she said.
"I'm sorry, it's just..."
"It's just what? Jack, I need to know what you're all about. I mean, you're staying in my house, for God's sake. If you're like an escaped con or something, I need to know it. Are you?"
She looked up and met his gaze. "No," he said, "I'm not."
"Okay, good. So what then? Just tell me the truth."
He exhaled and tried to collect his thoughts. "The truth, Nikki, isn't believable. I'm sorry. There's no... Christ, I hardly believe it myself."
"Well, you better try," she said.
"Okay. Look, if I tell you the truth, okay, meaning what I believe to be the truth, can I just get your agreement to not call anyone or turn me out? I mean, honest, I haven't committed any crime here. You're not aiding and abetting. I can say that right up front. But I'm worried that what I'm about to tell you is going to sound insane to you. And I want to stay here. For a while, anyway. Can you agree to that? I know what I'm asking, believe me."
"Why do you want to be here?"
He let out a deep breath and shrugged. "I like you."
"Oh, fuck off."
"What?"
"Why?"
"Really, is that such a big deal? You're funny. You took care of me. Jesus, you saved my life. What's not to like? Besides, I feel safe here. I need this time to rest." She shrugged.
"I'll buy that one. Anyway, if I'm not guilty for having you here or in danger from you, then you can tell me all the weird shit you want."
"You're not on both counts," he said. "I promise. So long as a certain person doesn't know where I am, we're both safe as houses."
"Okay, Jack. Spill the beans already."
It sounded less surreal than he had expected as he told her the story. He began with Dr. Gromwell diagnosing him and went through detail by detail, carefully explaining each new development as it had taken place. "It was a kind of birth," he said, "a parasitic twinship, and when he slid off of me, my instinct was to kill him. You know, I wrapped my fingers around his neck, and I was going to just strangle him. But I couldn't. For some reason, I just couldn't. I thought it had something to do with my emotional involvement. But I don't think that anymore. I think it goes deeper than that." He took her through Jerry's development, how he began as a near cripple, an autistic twin brother unable to care for himself or function normally. "I thought I'd have to take care of him for the rest of my life," he said. "And I was planning on offloading him into some kind of care facility or home or something. I wasn't really sure what to do. He had no social security number, no identification. I didn't know how I could get any kind of state welfare for him. So I just took care of him until I could figure it out. He lived with me. And then the zoo happened. And after that, everything changed." He told her about the monkey attacking him, bending his fingers back and slamming him up against the cage bars. And the night that followed, when Jerry had acted just like the animal, how he'd come into Jack's room and attacked him, bent Jack's fingers back too, and then clobbered him with a security flashlight. "I woke up in a daze," he said, "not knowing what had happened, but I was tied up to the bed with lamp cords and duct tape and bathrobe sashes. And he was out there, watching TV. I heard him saying the sounds. You know, the words people on TV were saying, over and over until he could say them right, with the correct inflection, until he sounded like me. I didn't see him for days, shut up in that room, pissing the bed, starving. I screamed and shouted to get his attention, and when he finally came bursting into the room, he didn't say anything or even look me in the eye. He just fucking sat on my chest until I could barely breathe. Day after day this went on, night after night. He'd be out there with the TV blaring, him saying all the words, then sentences, then little speeches, bits of commercials or announcements. News at 9, or fun for the whole family, shit like that. He was just mimicking, all the time just mimicking, until those little scripts he was reeling off became how he talked. The commercials and shows, they became his vocabulary. Jack stared up at Nikki across the table. He shook his head. He took his personality from the television, like an amalgam of all the voices and expressions he'd ever heard or seen. It was days before he came into the room again. I was laying in a puddle of shit and piss, too sore and weak to move, and he was dressed up in my fucking clothes, in my fucking one and only Italian suit. And the worst thing about it, he looked fucking good. Then he sat down on the foot of the bed and looked down at me with an expression of pity or shame, I'm not sure which. He said, "I gotta go out, Jack, but don't worry, I'll be back. And when I am, you better be ready to play the game." "What did he mean?" Nikki asked. Jack shook his head and looked down. "I was about to find out." He fixed his sight onto a piece of furniture in the living room and held it there. If he could just anchor himself to the outside world, he might be able to tell the rest of the story without bawling like a child or going nuts. He came back around midnight, I think. He woke me, or roused me. He had a bunch of bags, you know, shopping bags. He came into the room and turned on the light, and he sat down on the bed beside me, said something like, "I bet you're hungry," or I think he used the word famished. Anyway, he reached into a bag and pulled out a jar. I couldn't really see too well, but he opened it and dipped the spoon in and told me to open up. It smelled like food, and I was starving, so I did. "Eat up," he said. It was Gerber baby food. He loved to do that, you know, feed me. He took his sweet time doing it, too. Slowly, placing the spoon in my mouth, then pulling it up on the way out. You know, like how you do when you feed a baby. I fucking hated him for that. Jack laughed wickedly. "You know, out of all the fucked up shit he did to me, to my family, that little bit of feeding me like a goddamn baby may be the one thing I hate him for the most. God, I fucking couldn't stand that. Because he was taunting me, that's why. He was playing with me, emasculating me, taking away what shred of self-respect and pride I had left, and making me fucking beg him. He made me into a fucking dog. He knew how hungry I was, and yet
He sat there with that little fucking baby jar and that spoon, with his legs crossed and that goddamn shit-eating grin on his face. My fucking face. Saying, open wide, and there, there. I could fucking kill him just for that. What then, Jack? She asked. What happened then? Jack gritted his teeth. The outside world faded from his view. All he could see now was Jerry. Jerry sitting by him on the bed. Jerry standing over him. After he fed me, he went into the other room. He said he had a surprise for me. I heard him unwrapping something. You know, crepe paper and whatnot. He had some new clothes, I guessed. I had no idea. He opened the door and he was wearing a suit made of leather with a mask, Nikki. A fucking full-on, you know, gimp hood or whatever. From head to toe, he was covered. Shiny black leather, skin tight. I mean, he could have painted it on. And it had zipper tracks in two places. He broke off, clutching the edge of the table. Jack, it's okay. You don't have to. No, he said. I need to, Nikki. I need to remember exactly what that motherfucker did to me. All of it. I need to remember every little part, every single fucking detail. I need to remember, Nikki, because those are things I'm going to be thinking about when I blow his brains out. He flopped me over, Nikki, onto my stomach. You know I was naked and covered in my own filth. I mean, he didn't care about anything. He just kept saying, the game, the motherfucking game. I heard his zipper open, and he was on me, all over me, in me, fucking cocksucker. Jack was wiping the tears away from his eyes. That goddamn fucking cocksucker. And that was the first time many, Nikki. That was just the start. That was Jerry. That's what he did, what he loved. Every day, Nikki. That's how it went. If I wanted to eat, I had to beg and plead. And then he had to be the one to feed me. Those were the rules. And then I had to let him do all the rest. That was my payment. Every fucking day. Oh, days would go by when I would refuse, when I just resolved to starve to death. But after a day or two like that, he would come in with something else. Not the Gerber, but something hot, something delicious. You know, oatmeal, and stew, and fresh baked bread, fucking popcorn. You know, when you're hungry, that kind of shit just smells so good. You go out of your mind just to taste it. He'd sit there and slather a big dollop of butter onto the bread or something, and he'd say, I know you want some, Jack. Just say a word, and you can eat as much as you want. Just say it, Jack. Just give me consent, and you can have it all. Jack looked up at Nikki, tears pouring from his eyes. I fucking hate him, he bawled. Hate him so fucking much. But I had to protect Amy, my innocent baby. That was the thing. That's where he really got me. See, Jerry moved us out of my condo. You know, he knew about the cabin we own. I don't even know how he found out, but somehow he fucking knew. And so he pretended he was me, and he moved us. By then, I couldn't fight him at all. I mean, I was just so beaten down, literally, so fucking demoralized. Shit, Nikki, I honestly don't know how I'm still alive. I mean, whether from him killing me or suicide, I don't... He took a deep breath and tightened his hands into fists. My anger, my desire for revenge is the only thing keeping me going, the only thing that got me through it. I mean, once he brought Amy into it, I had to fucking live just to spite that motherfucker so that someday I could find him and kill him. I'm sorry. That's the truth. Jack, it's all right. I'm not judging you. You're too good, Nikki. You know that? He was crying. You're too fucking good. Jack. I made a fucking deal. He bawled and slid off his chair onto the floor. Oh, God, I fucking hate him. I made a fucking deal with that cocksucker. Jack curled into himself, sobbing. He was still too weak. The pain was too fresh. He still couldn't handle this. Tears soaked his cheeks, his shirt. Jack, it's okay. I understand. Nikki's arms were around him. Nikki's lips were on his cheek, her hands on his forehead. Shh, shh. It's okay. It's okay. Nikki was rocking him, like a child on the floor. She was mothering him, caring for him. Nikki was with him. She was quieting him, helping him, letting him heal. I fucking hate him.
Jack stirred cream into his tea. His eyes were raw, but the grief had passed, for now.
You want honey? She asked.
Yeah, a little. Thank you. They clinked their spoons against the sides of their cups as they stirred, and then sipped their teas. She sat back and yawned.
Jack, what if I told you I believe you? What would you say?
He shrugged. I don't know. I guess. I don't know why you would. I know how it sounds, but I don't think I'd believe you.
Odd, huh? So if I say I believe you, you don't believe me? Who's crazier?
I get your point. I guess I wouldn't expect you to believe it without proof. I don't honestly think you should take what I say at face value.
Why not?
He shrugged.
Unless you don't even believe it, she ventured.
He nodded his head thoughtfully. Yeah, it's almost like I don't know that I should believe it either. He laughed. And God, that's so fucked up, isn't it? It happened to me, and I don't believe it. The thing is, I can sit here and tell you all about it, and yet it's still so unreal to me. But I can tell you that it did happen. See, it happened, even though it's impossible. It can't have happened. It did happen. It's like those two things can't exist in the same universe, at least in a normal, logical mind. But they do.
Okay, she said, putting her hands out in front of her on the table. So what have we got here, then? You had a certain experience. That much we can say, right?
Yeah, we can say that.
And this explanation you're giving me now is what you believe happened to you. Never mind how unreal or strange it sounds. It's what you recall, right?
He nodded. If we're ruling out that I was somehow drugged or hypnotized without my knowledge, or that I'm batshit crazy, she cut in.
Well, no. I mean, yes, on the drugged and hypnotized without your knowledge part, but I think, and no offense, that in this particular case, we shouldn't rule out the crazy card. I mean, I don't think you're nuts, mainly because you have evidence, as in physical evidence on your body, that something tragic happened. But for the sake of this logical argument, I think you being nuts and making it all up is a possibility. We have to, until proved beyond all shadow of a doubt, include that as one possible outcome of our investigation, if the evidence points us that way.
I see.
What seems real or feels real, she continued, doesn't necessarily have to correspond to what is real. I'm thinking in terms of other people, of police. I'm thinking we need to prove it to ourselves first. Only then will we be able to prove it to the rest of the world. If we have the proof, we can handle it. If there is no proof, then we can assume it never happened, and we don't need to handle it. You see what I'm saying?
Yes. Concrete evidence will dictate a course of action. No evidence means I need to get my head checked, he said.
Exactly. Either way, we solve the problem.
We, as in both of us? She nodded.
Yeah, I'll help you. I want to. I don't have anything else to do anyway.
He laughed. You're way too sweet, he said.
I try not to be.
I know, he said. You do. You try to be something else, but Nikki, you're very caring, and I am grateful to have found you. I really am.
Ah, shucks, she said sarcastically. But seriously, Jack, we got to put this guy away. That's why I'm saying to prove it to ourselves first. Once we have that, we can prove it to the authorities.
Jack smiled wanly. He took a deep breath. That's the whole crux of the situation here. That's everything. He's not real enough to put into jail. She blinked. She hadn't expected him to say that. He had thrown her for a loop.
I don't understand, she said. If the two of you were put side by side, then everyone would see that you and him are not the same person. Everyone would see that he's real.
That's assuming you can get us both in the same room.
I'm sorry.
I didn't mean to yell, but that's the whole thing. She sighed defeat.
I don't get where you're coming from.
Where I'm coming from is that Jerry, as himself, separate from me, does not exist in the eyes of the law. He does not exist on paper. No social security number, no driver's license. See? He's a ghost in the system. He's me in the system. But if we kill him, we'll have a dead body on our hands. And that makes us guilty of murder, social security number or no. She nodded.
That's why I'm saying to get him arrested.
The idea that we could get Jerry and me, not just in the same room at the same time, but in the same police precinct or court of law at the same time, is a pipe dream. It just wouldn't happen, that's all. He's not going to let that happen.
She stared at him, her eyebrows furrowing rigidly. So, let's say a court order got issued to, I don't know, make Jerry appear before a judge? You're saying that he wouldn't appear? And if he did, he would appear as you, right?
I'm saying a court order would never even get issued, because there's no such person as Jerry Fuller.
Well, what if he got arrested on his own? She said.
Jack shook his head. He's too clever for that. His crimes are carefully calculated. He's not going to slip up in such a way that gets him arrested. Any crime he commits, he'll do in secret so that the trail always leads back to me.
Well, what if we trick him then? She suggested. Get him to show up someplace where you are too, in public, so there are witnesses.
Jack took a deep breath. Jerry is highly intelligent, and once he realizes that he's about to show up somewhere where his anonymity will be compromised, he's not going to come. See, you have to look at this the right way. If everything I say is true, then Jerry is a parasite, okay? Gromwell had it right, even if he didn't know what or how. Jerry's a parasite, so he's going to hide at all costs because that's how he stays alive.
I see, she said.
He's like a chameleon or something.
He's a doppelganger, she said.
What's that?
She popped her eyes and laughed at him. That's classic, she said. Oh, Jack, that takes the cake. You don't know? Come on. It's a body double. Someone who looks just like you and is not you, but is you, kind of, and is really evil and haunts you.
Yeah, Jack said numbly. That sounds like Jerry. As long as he's alive, he's me. But once he's dead, then, well, I'm afraid he'll just be a dead body, which is bad for everyone.
Can't you hide a dead body, Jack?
You can, he admitted, but it's very difficult, and dead bodies have the bad habit of showing up to ruin your day. Maybe not right away. Maybe it takes 10 years, maybe 20, or maybe you actually get away with it. But it's the risk you have to be willing to take.
Nikki sat back and mulled it over. If this is true, if this is all true, and realize something right here now, Jack, I want to make something very clear to you before we keep talking about this. I'm not saying to take an innocent life, okay? You got it? I'm not a murderer.
Neither am I.
Okay. So, if what you say is really true, there will be a way to prove it. I believe that. Which means, then, that removing him is not a real crime, right? If what you say is true, but it actually has to be true. I mean, there really has to be a guy who came off your back. You understand?
Nikki, I'm the one telling you all of this. Of course I understand.
I know, but Jack, if you're fucking with me, or if you're a fucking lunatic, then we're guilty of conspiracy to murder, you and me. So I'm just trying to dot my I's, if you don't mind.
Right, he said. That's right, and you should. Look, I'm not asking you to do what I'm going to do, okay? Understand that right now. I'm not asking you to do anything or even believe what I'm saying. I'm just, well, you asked for the truth and I'm telling you. As fucked up and impossible as my story is, I'm telling you the truth as I know it. It happened, that's all. Jerry is a fake person. I don't know, a doppelganger, a demon body, a creature, whatever. Jerry is not he's not a natural human being as we know it. I guess what I'm trying to say is, if you're going to walk this road with me, this road that could lead to lawful murder, then you have to be willing to...
Oh, my God. Jack, what is it?
He shook his head.
Jack, my God, you're as white as a sheet. What just happened?
That's it, he said. That's what he meant when he said, play the game. That's what he's been talking about all along. See, if you're going to walk this road with me, then you have to be willing to play the game. Jerry's game is the game of who gets to be real.
And the loser? She asked.
The loser? He said methodically, looking up at her with astonished eyes, as if he'd just seen a ghost, The loser has to disappear.